6:13 on a foggy Wednesday morning. It got heavier just since I drove in about an hour. So if you got a fog report, you can safely text in 504-260-1870. As I said earlier, the Crescent City Connection brightly lit up in pink lights, and I can see it from the corner of Poydras and Magazine, which is not that far away. And when I drove in, the fog was kind of lifting up from the bottom to the tops of the buildings in the CBD and looked really Halloweenish, like they had a smoke machine or something going on. But either way, be careful. Warm today and tomorrow and through the next several days, highs in the lower 80s. You heard Peyton Malone say it's going to be a warm Halloween, but dry, bone dry, no rain at all, and the tropics are quiet, and we're just about through hurricane season. David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University. Good morning, David.
I'm doing well, and I hope you're doing well today.
We are. We're just about through the presidential election as well, less than 2 weeks away, early voting underway. Have we been able to glean anything? Do they do exit polling on early voting or not?
They do not do exit polling. The only thing we do know at this point is that unlike 4 years ago, where Donald Trump was discouraging people from his supporters from doing early voting, this time there seems to be some evidence. If you look at areas where the votes are coming from, it's looking like Republicans are coming out and voting early also, too. You know, but again, it's not an exact science right now. We're basically kind of what we know what happened from geographic areas from 4 years ago. But early voting is up across the country because I think people kind of like the idea of what? Early voting and not standing in lines on Election Day.
According to Louisiana Secretary of State, of the people that have voted early, so far, 37.5% have been Democrats, 34.6% have been Republicans, 27% other parties, 3,019,000 overall. In the first 3 days, it was 38% Democrats, but 45% of early voters were Republicans, 15% other parties. And it's interesting how, look, candidates change their opinion all the time. If you're on their side, you say they revise their strategy. If you're against them, you say they're flip-flop, and that happens all the time. Candidates say one thing, then another. But right. When it comes to former President Trump and railing against early voting, now saying get out and vote, it seems as though he's made that transition seamlessly with his followers.
It does seem like he's done it, and I think this is a smart move for him, as well as it would have been for the Democrats, too, because what you basically want to do at this point is lock those votes down as much as possible, because if you can get Smith or Schultz off the vote and they've already cast the ballot, I don't have to worry about Smith or Schultz now. I move on to Jones, et cetera, and worry about getting them out to vote. And I think that's, again, so Trump, I think, learned the lesson from before, and also this might help him even more so on election night, because if he's got the day of election voting, and some states they do count the early votes, not all of them, it might help him in terms of where he looks on election night. Because remember, 4 years ago, he was ahead in several states, but then all they had to wait to count all the early ballots. And so I think this is in part a way of trying to mitigate some of that, too.
I don't understand the French fry thing at McDonald's. I don't know what that was trying to do. Am I missing something or not? And I'm not trying to criticize the former president. I just don't get it politically, the strategy of what that was supposed to show.
Well, what's really become interesting in American politics is how geography, voting, and marketing, you know, the products that we buy, reinforce one another. And there was this really fascinating article last week in the Washington Post that pointed out that if you look at how the Trump campaign is spending money, for like where they go to eat, where they get food or pick up coffee versus the Harris campaign, McDonald's was a great dividing line. Republicans go to McDonald's, they go to Dunkin' Donuts, Democrats go elsewhere. Everybody seems to go to Starbucks for coffee. But, you know, but I've been talking about for years how you tell me what kind of car you drive. You tell me where you go to eat. You tell me the clothing that you wear. And I can make nearly perfect predictions about how you're going to vote. So the McDonald's, for some reason, McDonald's has become Republican.
See, that surprises me, because you would think Republicans, no disrespect to anybody here, I'm
right,
going to get everybody angry by saying this, David, but you would think, generally speaking, correct me if I'm wrong, Republicans are more educated or not?
Now it's become Democrats flipped it. It used to be 20 years ago, college degree was a great indication of voting Republican. Now it has shifted, where one of the big divides in American politics is if you've got some college education or graduated from college, much more likely to vote Democrat than Republican. That's, you know, versus 20 years ago, if you were working class, you were much more likely to vote Democrat. We've just about flipped things, and this is happening before Trump, by the way. It's not just during Trump, but this is one of the flips that's been occurring in American politics. But what surprised me about the McDonald's is that, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong here, I kind of thought McDonald's was kind of universal American, you know, that everybody goes to McDonald's or something like that. So, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. So I'm thinking it reinforces his support with Republicans because they're saying, well, yeah, I go to McDonald's. I like eating a Big Mac. President goes there. He serves fries. Yeah, okay, I like him. I can bond with him. Huh. I guess that's the logic.
Well, somebody texted in, and look, I've seen the meme about him fixing the ice cream machine and so forth. I get that. But somebody texted and said it was a what do you call it? It was a publicity stunt. Get a sense of humor. I have a sense of humor, believe me. But I just know politically back in the day when you look at Michael Dukakis with the helmet and the tank, right? And John Kennedy, even they gave him a hat in Texas, and he said, "No, I'm not going to put that on because you didn't want to be photographed in anything foolish as a presidential candidate." But now it seems as though dressing up as a fry cook at McDonald's is something that you do want to be seen as. That's all I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, and that is the part that's strange now. It's just the sense in which I think, what's the phrase from years ago? I want to be able to go out and have a beer or a cup of coffee with the person who's the president. And again, it's a sense of bonding or identification. Again, nothing against people who work at McDonald's, but I want my qualifications for president more than the fact that I can just, I can say, do you want fries with that or something like that?
Other thing is that, to be clear, he didn't work a shift at McDonald's. This was staged. They had the audience, the drive-through window was pre-selected because they got security concerns and everything else. They tried to kill a guy twice. You're not going to have him working a drive-through window at McDonald's with anybody that drives up. That's common sense. But do people think that he was actually really working a shift, or do they realize it was a staged event?
In a world right now where people can't seem to separate fact from fiction, I think some people will watch it and say, oh, yeah, okay, so he showed up there. But even if it's not, again, it's about creating images. What was that commercial from years ago? Was it, I don't play a doctor on, I'm not a real doctor, but I play one on television or something like that, for whatever product it was, something like that. I think that's sort of what it is now. I'm not really a fry cook, at McDonald's, but I'm playing one for the purposes of this ad or something like that. That's really, I think, this blurring of fact and fiction.
Maybe I'm old and curmudgeonly, but it just seems stupid to me. I don't care if Kamala Harris had done it. It would just seem stupid. It's like, really, we got so many issues with debt and deficit in this country, with inequalities of income, with Social Security. That's going to be the difference maker on who you vote for, whether or not you serve fries at McDonald's, really. And that's not against former President Trump. I don't care who would have done it. It just seems like, what's the old thing? We got serious issues, and it's time for serious discussions, not this kind of foolishness. But I guess it's politics. 6:22, more we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 6:26. Well, apparently this McDonald's thing has elicited a lot of emotional responses from people about how she didn't work at McDonald's. She did work at McDonald's. I don't know what McDonald's is saying about it. I worked at Firestone back in the day, but I worked for a long time, not for a couple of weeks. So I still, I got, I guess, some documentation of that. Not that it would make me a more fit presidential candidate. How big of an issue is this just a more sizzle to the steak, or is it sideshow? Tell me, David, how much of a big deal is this?
At this point, it's probably just noise. I mean, think about it. Is that with less than 2 weeks to go, I doubt there is any mind to be changed in America. People have made up their minds. Maybe the only debate is, am I going to show up to vote, or do I want to say, a pox on both houses and stay home or something like that? But I think this is just a lot of noise right now. And there's all kinds of indications that, from a lot of research that's been done, that especially at this stage, that the few people who are undecided, they're not paying attention to stuff like this. They're just not paying attention.
Let me read you a couple of texts. One says, work ethic. Trump has it, Harris not so much. It's pretty obvious. I think people ignore the fact that Trump started with how many million dollars? That he's somehow crafted this story that he's a guy that grew up shoveling cement, and that's not the case at all, but people believe it. I don't know. Kamala Harris, I don't know what her background is, but I do know Trump from a long time ago was born rich. So somebody else saying, so you're saying that people who work at McDonald's are stupid. Trump is at McDonald's to show he's for the working class people. Well, I guarantee you this same person would not be in support of a minimum wage raise for people who work at McDonald's because they would say that that's just an entry-level job, right?
Yeah, I think you're right on that score here. Yeah, I mean, to me, the McDonald's story will become, like I said, the noise, a distraction. It'll like with all your callers or texters like this point, it's going to elicit a whole bunch of sort of reaction. But at the end of the day, it's just not going to change anybody's minds about anything.
Let me clean this up, David, if I might. I said 3 million people voted earlier. I misread the data that somebody sent me. There are 3 million registered voters.
Okay.
That's not accurate at all. 350,000 people total have voted, not 3 million. I want to clean that up.
All right. So anyhow, my point being is that we have a lot of noise, especially with all we voted at this point. These stories, they're just not going to affect people.
Man, the people that love Donald Trump, you better not say anything. You better not even mention his name without saying in the name of the Father and the Son and Donald Trump, or else they're going to jump all over you. There is something about this man that resonates with people.
Yep, I think he's got a charismatic authority in the sense that people just love him personally. Remember, he caught it 8 years ago. I could stand on Fifth Avenue, shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose support. His supporters are with him, for good or for bad, and I leave that up to the supporters to make their own decision on that.
You know, the old thing, and I'm going to go a minute late here, they say, you know, the old saying about, I don't know what it is, but he has it. What is it?
Uh-huh.
What is it about him that resonates with people so much?
Well, I think in part it is, Well, first off, it's the fact that the other two parties are the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. They're not speaking to working class America. There's just no question about that. And they're not talking about the issues that I think that are important to them. So I think by default, when he comes around and says, listen, I'm the anti-establishment candidate, at least 8 years ago, there was some appeal to that. But remember, he's been president now. He's been president for 4 years. And I think it just comes down to at this point that he speaks it about some frustrations and anger that some of his supporters feel on a day-to-day basis.
And the texts come in about Kamala Harris pouring in about lying about working at McDonald's. Well, former President Trump, with all due respect, has been known to stretch the truth as well. So, but that doesn't seem to matter so much. It's amazing to me. Thank you, David Schultz. Appreciate it. We'll take a break, come back, talk about Governor Landry's tax plan right now. A minute late, time for WWL First News. 6:46, 14 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. The fog has lifted and moved behind the Crescent City Connection, so I can now see the pink lights beautifully lit up. Stephen Procopio joins us now, president of the Public Affairs Research Council. Good morning, Mr. Procopio. I'd like to welcome you to testify before this committee. And right now, so I'd like to remind you that you are under oath, and I would have to ask you, are you now or have you ever been an employee of McDonald's? I'm just kidding. How you doing?
Good. I've never been an employee of McDonald's, but I worked for Pizza Hut for a while.
So I would remind you, sir, that you are under oath talking to this committee. Let's talk about Governor Landry. And I would remind you that I worked for Firestone busting tires as a kid. And I envied you guys that worked at Pizza Hut and grocery stores and everything else because it seemed like a lot easier work. Let's talk about Governor Landry's tax plan. What did the Public Affairs Research Council look into, and what did they find?
Sure, and it was a partnership with both us, Committee 100, and Cable. So all three of us, we really wanted to look at, okay, how we know the tax plan, we're going to move to a flat tax, and we're also going to, on sales tax, start to tax services and digital services. And so what was going to be the effect on households? Like, was this going to be regressive? Because I think a lot of people, including ourselves, were concerned this might affect more people.
Let me jump in for 1 second, Stephen, because you're throwing some terms around. Let's start with flat tax and regressive, just to start with, and what that means for people that might not get it.
So our flat tax, right now for income tax, there are three brackets. So if you make up to $12,000, you pay 1.85% of that income as taxes. And up to $50,000, you pay 3.5%. And then over $50,000, you pay 4.25%. So depending on the income you're making, that gets taxed at different levels. A flat tax means there's one rate, 3%, is what the governor's proposing, no matter your amount of income that you're making. So, and generally, a flat tax by itself is considered regressive, because then, you know, people at the higher end spectrum aren't paying as much as people at the as they were before. Mm-hmm. But in this particular proposal, he's also the governor's also proposing to triple the standard deduction, so from $4,500 to $12,500, which makes a big difference in terms of making sure it's not regressive. Regressive meaning it disproportionately hits people from lower and moderate incomes.
What effect would that have on the economy of Louisiana?
Now, that is another big picture, and I can't answer that. We can only pay Greg Albrecht so much money. That was the economist that we hired. It used to be the economist for the Legislative Fiscal Office that would write fiscal notes. We didn't have enough time, and we didn't particularly ask him about that question. We were really more asking him, how is this tax plan going to hit people of different incomes, is really the focus of what we did.
So how are we defining, I guess, lower incomes or the poor? And I guess what effect would that have on people? We got this information, but what does it mean, I guess, what I'm asking you, Stephen?
Sure. I mean, to get to the end question, the spoilers, is that actually this, what they're proposing, actually is slightly more progressive than the current system. The way they're structuring it and the way the standard deduction is that for income tax, actually people that are poorer or more moderate income will actually tend to get the biggest benefit from the tax cut. That's not to say that everybody, and that's in terms of percentage of a cut. So you're looking at something along the lines of a 40% cut for those people, for an individual making $50,000 and what they're paying in income tax. Now, in terms of absolute dollars, if you're a millionaire and you get a cut, even if you get a smaller percentage, you're still going to have a bigger absolute dollar cut. So you're looking at something on the lines of like a $3,000 cut if you're making $500,000. And if you're making $70,000, you're getting a $500 cut. But as a proportion of income, it's actually better for the lower and moderate income. And I'm talking in the, you know, basically anything up to about 80% or $80,000 is getting a good deal. And it goes down from there. So that's on the income side. So it's actually just about everyone's getting a pretty sizable income tax cut. And then on the other side is sales tax. On sales tax, there's a whole bunch of things. There's about a half-cent sales tax that was going to roll off. Mm-hmm. As part of their plan, they're going to keep that on. They're also going to expand to various services like car washes, personal services, not attorneys, not legal services, but like delivery services. Lobbyists are going to get hit with a tax. So you hire a lobbyist, you got to pay a sales tax. Also, the digital goods, like video streaming, like Netflix, digital games, Candy Crush, and then subscription services. A lot of people don't buy computer programs anymore. You essentially rent them, mm-hmm. and you would be paying a sales tax on that.
All right, let me take a
break.
We
also had a concern.
Sure. We'll pick it up there. We come back. You also had a concern, yeah. All right? Remember where you were. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Stephen Procopio, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, about President Governor Landry's proposed tax plan for Louisiana. 651 traffic now, WWL. Wednesday morning, October 23rd, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Stephen Procopio, president of Public Affairs Research Council, about Governor Landry's proposed tax plan and what they've who's this Albrecht guy? I don't have it in front of me.
Greg Albrecht.
So Greg Albrecht did an analysis of it and said that it would be more progressive than the current system. You said you also had a concern about what, Stephen?
Oh, wait, no. So that's on the individual income tax.
We also have
on the sales tax as well.
Right.
Because there's going to be expansion of sales tax to digital services as well as personal services as opposed to like actual goods that you buy.
So is that going to hurt any group more than the other?
At an income level, not really. It will help. It will actually hit higher income groups a little harder because they're the people that tend to buy more personal services, have delivery services, lawn care. So it tends to hit them a little bit harder proportionally. What we don't know, and we didn't really get an answer on this because we were looking at people, is how it will hit business, because there's a lot of services here that might hit businesses. And so I can't tell you how it will hit larger versus small business. So that we still is an open question. In terms of families, it will be less bad for those that are have less income, and it'll probably hit those people that use these services harder in the sense that they're buying more stuff. It's one rate for everybody, but the people that have more income tend to use personal services more as to buying like physical goods.
So I see Alan Seaball, who is about as conservative can be, saying that it seems like a good idea, but the devil's in the details. I see Democrats saying, I don't know if they can support the plan. Well, what does Parr think about this? Is there enough information out? Is there enough time to vet all of this? Because the devil is indeed in the details.
I absolutely agree. And that's part of why we did this study, because we know that the fiscal office is going to come out, the legislative fiscal office is going to come out with notes that tell us how much all these things cost. But we were concerned that, you know, how this is going to impact families of different income might get lost in the shuffle. So that's why we did the study. I do think there's still information we got to go through. I think it's becoming clear what's going to happen with the income tax and the sales tax. I know businesses are diving into the corporate tax. So I think this is becoming clear every day. But, you know, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. How is the constitutional amendment? They're going to have a rewrite of Article 7. There's still a lot of information to kind of go through there. And now that we've got this tax report out, that's probably what Parr is going to turn our attention to.
So what is the next step here? Is there going to be a special session or not?
I have heard that there is. It's just a matter of when exactly they're going to call it. They're going to call it on like the 7th, or they're going to call it the 11th. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure we're going to have a special session.
Thank you, Stephen. Appreciate your time and the information as always. Stephen Procopio, president of the Public Affairs Research Council. When we come back, we're going to talk to Leslie Harris. She's been very involved with finding housing for homeless people that are in homeless encampments. And Louisiana State Police has a plan to close New Orleans' largest remaining homeless encampment this week because of the Taylor Swift concert. It set off a political firestorm. We'll get her take on this when we come back. Then we're going to talk to the chief economic development officer of the Downtown Development District about Swifties and their descent on the city and what that could mean economically. So a lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, WWL.